Thank you so much. I think I just want to start by, I feel totally overwhelmed, and some of you know exactly how overwhelmed I am feeling. But first of all, I want to say some thank yous. But before I even say thank yous, please pray for me to not drift off in a completely different direction. I did hear today some wonderful remarks from two of my grandchildren, one of whom said a friend of his stood on the foot of another friend at school, and my grandson said, "It's not your fault, it's the world." And he also has been heard to say, "Nothing is real, we are all in a complete dream." So they say wonderful things, don't they? And we should write them down, really. I want to thank lots and lots of people. First of all, thank you to BRF. Thank you so much for helping this book come to birth. Thank you, Olivia, for being such a great source of help. And thank you to Karen, and thank you to Ellie, and thank you to Richard for coming all the way from London today. Thank you so much. Thank you to everybody. I've said lots of these things in the foreword to the book. Thank you to everybody at St Aldate's. It's very moving to me to have a lot of the staff here, because hardly any of you are grandparents, and you know, it's kind of not completely relevant to you yet. But hopefully your parents might buy the book. Thank you so much to Rob and Di, who have been friends of ours for a very long time, probably 40 plus years. And I know you're only 30, Di, but you've got a few problems. Mental health, my friend. And thank you, Catherine, for being here, also from Care for the Family. I do want to specifically say that I am very grateful to Catherine, both Catherine and Rob, for helping me make a book that I want to be available to people of all faiths and no faiths. I didn't really want to write something that was just for people who are bought into being a Christian, because of my heart to reach way beyond those barriers and boundaries, and outside of them. And both of you have helped me enormously in just tweaking this and that, and helping me to think through things that perhaps I wasn't expressing as I needed to. And I want to thank my family. Obviously, my children, Hannah and Jemima, are here. Alice and Jack are not. But they have been such a help to us in learning to be parents, first of all, and now learning to be grandparents, and learning to do all the things that Rob was talking about, understanding, accepting, having fun. When you talked about the different kinds of grandparents, Charlie is the spoiler. He's got a sweet drawer in his desk, and actually, that is the only reason any of our grandchildren come and stay with us. Anyway, and I do want to, of course, thank you, Charlie, for bearing with me in the nightmare moments and the good moments. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. So we thought we would just end this evening by asking Anita a few more questions about the book, what it was like to write it. So I'm Catherine Hill, and I'm the UK Director of Care for the Family. And it was a huge, I've known Anita for many years as well, I think.
Catherine came to me about a long, probably 30 years ago, was it?
Probably about,
no,
that.
No, 20. Not quite, 20.
20.
We're not that old. And said, "I'd like you to mentor me." And so we struck up a great friendship and relationship. But as I often say, we've swapped over. She's my mentor now. And we've swapped places.
And we found we'd been at the same school as well. We had. So there we go with Anita's sister. So, faithful grandparents. When Anita first told me about this project and she asked me to write the foreword, that was a huge privilege. And at Care for the Family, we've been doing some research about handing on faith in the context of the home. And one of the key things, one of the key points, really, of how faith is handed on in the home is the importance of the wider family, and grandparents are key for this. So I was really excited because it really fits into our heart at Care for the Family for seeing faith handed on in the context of the home, knowing there are no guarantees, but knowing there's so much, particularly grandparents, can do. And secondly, I am now even more thrilled to have written the foreword, because when I wrote this, I was not a grandparent, and now I am going to be a grandparent, not yet, but in May. So that's very exciting. So I'm reading it now with new eyes. So, Anita, so tell us first of all, why did you write the book?
Well, first of all, I wrote the book because BRF kindly approached Charlie and myself to co-write the book. Because I think you were doing... Where are you? I can't see you, Olivia. Where are you? Okay. You were doing a series on parenting and grandparenting. Yeah. I was a very difficult customer, just as I was when I was coming to faith and wanted to have a different title. But that's... BRF approached us. And Charlie and I don't work hugely well together on that kind of project because we maybe both got rather a lot to say from time to time. So anyway, actually we agreed together in the end that you had lots of other things to do, which you did. Is that terribly funny? And so I was given the privilege of taking this role.
Brilliant. And what was it like writing it?
Well, the truth is, I was just talking to you about this on the way up here. I love writing. I've always loved writing since I was a child. But it's actually it's a really hard work. It's really exposing. It's really, in some ways, it's very painful because you need to open the things that you write to other people and they're going to say, you know, this is terrible or you must change this or you must change that, which is good. You need all that feedback. But so it was a real mixture of really enjoying it and having those moments of being thinking, yeah, this is great, this is flowing out of the end of my pen or my computer, and other moments of thinking, oh my goodness, I really can't get my head around this question that I'm trying to address. And actually the most difficult chapter is the chapter that I had felt all along that I didn't want to write a book which was just a kind of, you know, tips for grandparents type of thing. And I had a real burden to try to say something, a very tiny something really in the end, because it's one chapter, about how our culture has changed since my own childhood. When I was a child, born in the beginning of the 50s, really everybody believed in God, I would say, after a fashion. They might not have necessarily been what some would term born again or evangelical, but pretty much the whole country was going to church at that time. And there was no... You would never have been... you would never have been kind of contested in your faith. But obviously over the last 60, 70 years, our whole culture has changed much faster than it has changed ever previously. And there's been a complete sort of speeding up of the changes. And I felt I wanted to address the fact that I felt there were many, many Christian, or people who would call themselves Christian, grandparents who were struggling with these changes, struggling to know how to relate to their children or their grandchildren with so many things that have been taken for granted in the past, no longer being taken for granted, being questioned, the whole climate that we live in opening up. And that was way the most difficult chapter to write.
It's one, though, I think I've heard you speak on other things, you're very good at that big picture, talking about culture. And I think you talk about it as being, is it called tectonic plates, a chapter? So the whole idea that this stuff is moving, often unseen, and we're often, particularly as grandparents, maybe on the back foot, and the age of Christendom is no longer here.
Well, we live in a, don't we? We live in post-Christendom, and post-truth has become one of the the new words in our language. Yeah.
So that was the hardest chapter to write.
Yep.
What was your favourite chapter to write?
I think my favourite chapter probably now was a chapter which is called This Sunrise of Wonder. And I've been very influenced, and I've loved a book by Michael Main, who used to be the Dean of Westminster. He died some years ago, but he wrote this book, and it's absolutely packed with quotations from poets and theologians and writers, and I love all that stuff. And he's I don't know if I would call him a mystic, but he's a contemplative person. He was a contemplative person, and he wrote this book for his grandchildren, letters to his grandchildren, and it's a kind of exploration of spirituality and an exploration of faith. And I wanted to have one chapter which was kind of meditative, if you like, not about a specific subject.
No, and I love that chapter. I've seen that one. I think my favourite bit in the book is from a chapter that is called Memories of the Future. And there's a little bit here that I really loved when Anita says this. She says, "You'd think that no one needs to be reminded to mark a birthday or Christmas, but the advent of the internet and social media has radically changed our habits of communication, and fewer people actually send cards. Parents don't usually forget their own children, but children often forget their parents' birthdays once they are no longer being reminded by one parent to make a card for the other. She says, our grandchildren are unlikely to send us birthday cards, not least because in their eyes we're very old. While being 6 or 12 or 18 is hugely exciting, all ages above 30 blur into one old number. Keeping the messages, letters and cards coming is our call, is giving without counting the cost, giving without seeking a reward. And then you say this, she says, if we are faithful in sowing, I believe one day the flowers will bloom. I must cite my mother-in-law here. For many years, thanks to one of her daughters who project managed this, she has a photo calendar with photos of every member of her large family, 15 grandchildren and 15 great-grandchildren and counting. And on the relevant month's page, she sends every one of them a card, including her children-in-law, though she has quite reasonably drawn the line at her grandchildren's spouses and partners. As a 90th birthday present, my three daughters gave her a bunch of flowers every month for a whole year. You will reap what you sow, though that is not why you sow. And I thought that was such a lovely little anecdote. Also because one of the grannies in our family died this year, and we were clearing out her house last week, and we found three scrapbooks of cards from our children ever since they were born. Every birthday, every Easter, every Christmas, every half term. The best one, I think, from our daughter said, "Dear Granny, thank you for the £2.50 you sent me. I bought this postcard with it." Anyway, I thought that was just a lovely, and there's lots of little anecdotes in here from your own family life. So how has your own experience of being a grandmother, how's that impacted your writing?
My own experience of being a grandmother, I think it's just made me really humble. I feel that I want to be, you know, really humble. I think my daughters are all the most amazing mothers. And often we talk about, you know, it's easier to be a grandparent, isn't it, really? All the pleasure and none of the pain kind of thing. But you learn so much from them. And I think it's just made me want to respect them and want to listen to them and listen to the grandchildren. And I think often we think the older we get, the more we know. But actually, I feel the older I get, the less I know. And I said to my brother-in-law yesterday on the phone that I felt I know nothing. Having written the book, I suddenly think, gosh, I really don't know anything at all. So I don't feel like a kind of expert grandparent at all. And I'm certainly writing to try and teach myself as much as anybody else.
But I love the way that you as a grandmother have really, the little stories that you sprinkled through it give it a really personal touch. So as we come to an end, what are your hopes for the book?
My hopes are that it would be really encouraging for people, and I think my deepest hope would probably be that for those grandparents who find themselves in quite difficult situations because of sometimes because of all the cultural changes we're all living through, that they would find some comfort and some hope that all is not dark. That would probably be... And I think that it would, you know, obviously that it would go far and wide as possible, and certainly go way beyond the doors of the church. I really don't like being shut in church, and I think all these walls should be permeable.
That is an amazing hope. In fact, I think you say that. I'm just trying to find it on the last page here. It says, sometimes life brings us times of great joy, and for me, this is one of them. Anita's just told a beautiful story about taking your granddaughter to the ballet and the ballerina being allowed to go behind the scenes at Covent Garden, and your granddaughter having a crown put on her head. A beautiful moment. And you've talked about that memory. You said it'll be a treasured memory that never fades. But more than that, it reminds me that life brings wonderful times as well as dark times, light as well as dark, and that light is more powerful than darkness. And that's definitely a golden thread that goes through this wonderful book. And I'm really thrilled to have written the foreword and really thrilled to commend it to you. So let's give Anita a round of applause.